Hello and welcome to Afternoonified,
the podcast that's going to take you camping. I'm Sarah.
And I'm Emily. I've got the tent, I've got sleeping bags, I've got marshmallows so we can make s'mores. What did you bring?
A gun.
No. There was a mini we did for Camp Afternoonified last year, where you told me a story about a woman who said she was never hiking without a gun. That's what it was.
That does sound familiar. Yeah.
I have to admit, I'm a little nervous to be going back to national parks with you.
there will be no missing 411 or Bigfoot in this episode. I'm like 99% sure.
I appreciate it because it did kind of feel like Michael Jackson going to Macaulay Culkin's birthday party.
we are going to talk about ghosts in national parks because we just missed National Park Week by a week. So we plan stupendously. But we are both visiting national parks this month, so I thought it would be appropriate.
Ooh, what national park are you going to?
Mount Rainier.
Ooh, that's a good one.
I was looking today, and it appears that most of it is still under 10 feet of snow in May. So I'm not sure I'm going to get to see a lot of it.
That's kind of where we are with the Rocky Mountain National Park.
Yeah, they have a lot of snow in the mountains, I guess.
Yeah, Rainier is, it's a great cheap beer. If you have the opportunity to have a Rainier when you're over here. I put it in the same category as like a Hams.
Okay, yeah.
Or a PBR, but like better, way better than PBR. No, but Rainier is like a big skiing and snowboarding. Actually, Timberline Lodge, the like big skiing place near Portland where they shot The Shining. Not the interiors, but like all the exteriors in The Shining are Timberline. Caught fire like 2 weeks ago.
Oh, damn. Is everything like okay?
It's closed, but it's going to be fine. But
okay, that's good.
Yeah. Rainier is beautiful.
Yeah, I'm looking forward to it. It's been a while since I've been. I think actually the only national park I've been to is Rocky Mountain National Park. So,
no kidding.
I'm excited to check another one off my list.
Does Minnesota have a lot of national parks?
We have Voyageurs, but it's like way up north and I've not gotten... It's like, I think Voyageurs is like right on the border of Minnesota and Canada, if I'm not mistaken. Or if it's not, it's like real close.
Okay.
So I've not gotten up that far north, but... We do have a lot of lovely state parks, which I have visited.
Not to be a complete pain in the ass about it, but my favorite national park is the Hawaii Volcanoes National Park.
Oh, okay. Just Redwoods casually dropping in that you've been to Hawaii. So today our episode is on national parks and their spooky ghosts, because we just missed National Parks Week by like a week. And... I like talking about spooky ghosts. So it's topical. We could
use that.
And spooky.
I have already forgotten what our last... Oh, no, it was cryptids. Never mind. Jesus Christ.
We've had a good run of just gently spooky things lately.
Bullshit.
Bullshit. I mean, 164 episode run of bullshit, I think.
Something like that. But there's been, you know, mini bullshit.
There's been other bullshit. Okay. So my sources for this episode are the National Parks Conservation Association, Outside Magazine, National Park Service, RV.com, of course, Fodor's Travel Guide, the National Air and Space Museum, ironically enough, Mental Floss, and Wikipedia. Okay. So we are starting with Ghosts in Great Smoky Mountains National Park, which sits on the border of North Carolina and Tennessee. It was established in 1940 to protect what is one of the most biodiverse landscapes in the world.
The Smoky Mountains seem like they'd be beautiful. Like, I know that that part of the country has kind of like a shitty reputation, but it just seems like so beautiful and rustic.
Oh, yeah. Everything I've heard about like this general region is just like unbelievably beautiful. So it's definitely, I would say, on my bucket list. So in just 800 square miles, there are over 19,000 documented species of animals, plants, and fungi that call the park home, and scientists believe there could be close to 100,000 more. So it's very dense with life.
I thought you were going to say 18,000 ghosts, and I was like, damn! I mean, it's still impressive.
I mean, when you have that many different types of living things, I guess that would technically correlate to you also have that many different types of dead things, you know?
I mean, are we talking like squirrel ghosts, or?
I was thinking like mushroom ghosts. Is that a thing?
I think it's a condition.
So the park is the most popular in the United States with over 14 million visitors a year, which is...
That's the most popular one in the United States?
That's the one. I'm surprised, too.
Even it's not Yellowstone?
Like Yellowstone only does like 4 million a year, I think, or something. Like, Yellowstone is definitely up there, but it doesn't beat out Great Smoky Mountains, believe it or not.
Yosemite? I mean, crazy.
I don't know if it's like... Because it's on the east and closer to more population centers, that has something to do with it. Maybe it's just more accessible. I don't know. I couldn't tell you why. I mean, obviously, there's a lot of things we're seeing about it, but I couldn't tell you why it is more popular than all the others. The Great Smoky Mountains are part of the Blue Ridge Mountains, which make up the larger Appalachian Mountain train. Appalachian. Sorry. Got Appalachia.
I think it can be both ways.
Uh-huh. Yeah, but like I like to say Caribbean it the Apple and Caribbean. Way, Appalachia way. Because it
Appalachia is fun, but Appalachian sounds, I guess it depends on the vibe you're going for. Again, like Caribbean or Caribbean. Like Appalachian is the Caribbean. It's more fun. It's like punchier, but Appalachian or Caribbean makes you sound learned.
Yeah, smart person. Before white settlers showed up, as you know they are wont to do, the land had been inhabited for centuries by the Cherokee people, whose lore included a shape-shifting creature named Utlana, or Spearfinger.
Hell yeah. Is that like Edward Scissorhands?
Well, not unlike Edward Scissorhands.
Or a Bond villain?
Will often take on the appearance of a frail older woman, an unassuming facade that hides a overly long forefinger made of black obsidian, which is, you know, a totally normal...
Oh, so it is a Bond villain.
...thing to have, yeah. She is said to haunt the area north of Fontana Lake, where the Nolan Creek Trail passes through, luring unsuspecting children away from their parents. She's a real spooky one.
Great.
Once she has them in her grasp, she pierces them through the heart and feeds on their liver.
Oh!
Yeah, just...
Old lady just things.
Spearfinger things. According to local legend, a settler's daughter once went missing near the Nolan Creek Trail. He set out to find her in the middle of the night, lantern in hand, but neither he nor his daughter were ever seen alive again. Today, hikers on the trail have reported seeing mysterious lights not unlike that of a lantern floating through the air, and others claim they've had issues with their GPS and other electronic devices while hiking the trail, you know, as you do.
You know, I believe both of those things, ghost or not.
There is a slightly less grim version of this legend where the father's ghost is not like just kind of a restless spirit, but like a friendly one. So like he's there, but he's using his lantern to guide you back to safety if you've like, you know, gotten lost on the
like
trail.
Like a spectral like park ranger.
Yeah, very much so.
That's nice.
There are also tales of ghost lights in the park, bright flashing lights that will sometimes appear over the Thomas Divide Ridge. And those that have researched the phenomenon think they might be electric charges from the granite in the mountain, or the usual, like, gas farts that cause things like marsh lights and will-o'-the-wisps. But they don't actually know for sure. So it also could be aliens.
God, so much shit has been attributed to the earth farting or, like, ball lightning. And it's like, it's kind of like with the owls and cryptids. It's like, it can't always fucking be ball lightning.
Maybe. Maybe some of the time, but definitely not all of the time.
Don't be a Joe Nickel about it.
So not overtly ghostly, but still kind of spooky. So people were still living in the Great Smoky Mountains when the area was established as a park. And so thousands of people had to leave their homes. So you can still see traces of their communities within the park. So like things like abandoned churches and old homesteads and, you know, a couple abandoned cemeteries, which is pretty spooky all on its own, ghosts or no.
That is giving big, I don't know if you've read Annihilation, but like the centerpiece of that book is like an abandoned town in like this big wild area that had to be cleared out.
Oh man, that would be, I've not seen or read Annihilation, but I've heard it's very good.
It's incredible. But yeah, it's basically like some weird shit happened. So they had to like clear out this whole community and now it's just kind of overgrown and... Like, there are animals living there and stuff.
Very much that vibe.
I can't believe they kicked people out.
That it does seem pretty rude. Especially since they've probably been
there for a
while.
When was it established?
1940.
I'd say we knew better, but we didn't.
No. We would still do that today.
Yeah.
Our next park is Mammoth Cave National Park, located in South Central Kentucky. It is famous for, believe it or not, being home to Mammoth
Mammoths.
Cave. The largest cave system in the world. Also mammoths, no. I think they mean mammoth in it's big, not there are mammoths there.
Oh.
Yeah, sorry.
Disappointing.
As of 2022, more than 426 miles of the cave have been mapped. And that's like just the parts of the cave we can get to and like know are there.
That's a lot of cave for not like
I don't like to think about it. Artifacts found inside the cave have been dated back hundreds of years, and cavers in the 19th and early 20th centuries discovered mummified remains of indigenous people that dated all the way back to 445 BC. So people have lived there for a while.
Yeah.
Before the cave became a national park in 1941, it was a saltpeter mine, a privately owned tourist attraction, and for a little while, a tuberculosis clinic.
In a cave?
In a cave.
Hot, dry air is supposed to be best for tuberculosis, not fucking Kentucky cave air.
Well, Dr. John Crogan would disagree with you. In 1939, he purchased the cave for $10,000 with the intention of turning it into a tuberculosis sanatorium.
Hope he has a good dehumidifier.
Fun fact, he was the nephew of William Clark of the famous Lewis and Clark expedition, and also a slave owner. So, there's that. His reasoning was that because all of the archaeological artifacts people were digging up were so well preserved, it would be the ideal environment to treat tuberculosis.
I'm not going to say that's the dumbest shit I've ever heard, but I'm going to put it in the top 20.
We knew absolutely nothing about medicine in 1839.
Or archaeology, apparently.
So Krogan had, you know, enslaved people, not himself, enslaved people, built a community of small cabins inside the cave where his 13 patients, his little test subjects, could live for a year. Of course, he didn't own the entire cave, and the cave was still a huge tourist attraction at the time. And public tours of the site didn't just stop because part of it was being used for a hospital. So people on tourists would sometimes stumble across tuberculosis patients in hospital gowns hear their coughs echoing throughout the cave.
And that's how he spread tuberculosis.
It didn't last very long. His experimental treatment never really worked out. 5 of his patients died, and the project was called off. But of course, this is an episode about ghosts. So, of course, some of them, it said, never made it out of the cave, you know, spiritually. Visitors today have reported hearing coughing coming from the tuberculosis cabins, of which 2 are still, like, standing.
I thought you were going to say in use.
No, not
in use. I was so worried.
And some have even seen the ghostly apparitions of the patients themselves. Another famous ghost of Mammoth Cave is that of caver Floyd Collins, who died after being trapped by inside a cave for 2 full weeks.
This is the story that made me scared of caves.
Yeah, this is my disclaimer is if you haven't heard the story of Floyd Collins before, 1, be prepared to hate me, and 2, if you're claustrophobic, maybe skip ahead.
It's bad. It's real bad, guys. It's bad.
So back up again. Floyd Collins was born in 1887 in Logan County, Kentucky, just a few miles from Mammoth Cave. And he was this kid absolutely nuts for caves. He was exploring them from the time he was 6 years old.
Nuts for caves?
Caves were a big thing during this time. He's credited with discovering a number of caves in the area, including one in 1917 that he named Crystal Cave due to its unique helictite and gypsum cave formations. That's a word I can say. In Kentucky at this time, like cave tourism was like a huge thing. It was incredibly lucrative, and local entrepreneurs, buoyed by the success of Mammoth Cave, like just competed for tourist dollars, essentially like mostly by lying to people. They would like, you know,
remember it was okay to lie back then.
Yeah. They'd like post signs saying Mammoth Cave was closed or inaccessible, and then like try and redirect tourists who are on their way to Mammoth Cave to their own other caves. And this era has literally been dubbed the Kentucky Cave Wars. So that was just a thing that happened. So Floyd himself.
You ever find yourself thinking, man, we're doing some stupid shit now. We've always been doing stupid shit like that. It's just we have the internet now.
See, this is my, I, This is my theory, is that, like, obviously I think the internet and social media has done irreparable harm to us as a society. Part of it, I think, is that it's like just putting a magnifying glass to parts of society that already existed. Like, there's always been assholes.
Yeah, you
hear more of them.
We just know about it now.
Yeah. So Floyd did his best to commercialize Crystal Cave, but didn't see much success. So he kept searching for, you know, bigger, cooler caves. Around 1925, he became aware of another cave known as Sand Cave that was located just off the road on the way to Mammoth Cave. And, you know, obviously, location is everything. You gotta lure those tourists away any way you can. So Floyd struck a deal with the owner of the land the cave was on. And the deal was he'd explore Sand Cave, and if it proved to be impressive enough to show off to tourists, the two of them would share the profits.
Sure.
Why not? Floyd entered Sand Cave for the first time on January 30th, 1925, only to find himself having to squeeze through one tight passageway after another. At one point, he found himself inching through a tight crawl. What?
I assume it was a cat, and he wasn't just... He found himself high, like he was tripping nuts.
No, it was June decided. Do you want uppies?
I bet Floyd wanted uppies.
So, I can't remember where I left off. We're going to start over this bullet point over. So, Floyd entered Sand Cave for the first time on January 30th, 1925, only to find himself having to squeeze through one tight passageway after another. At one point, he found himself inching through a tight crawl on his stomach, holding his kerosene lantern out in front of him. So, like, he had one arm
kind of stretched. Seems like a sign he shouldn't be down there.
Yeah, I don't like it. When the lamp began to flicker, he did turn back because he was smart enough to know, like, getting stuck in a cave without light is a death sentence. He doesn't want that. So he's trying to get out before the lantern goes. I would say turned back might not be the right phrasing because obviously there's no room to turn. I guess
he scooted back,
inching backwards. Yeah. Yeah, I hate it. Either way, at some point he managed to dislodge a 27-pound rock from the cave wall, which fell onto his ankle and pinned him in place 150 feet from the cave's entrance.
Yep.
So on the bright side, Floyd did leave word with someone where he was going. So he wasn't just out here alone. And when he failed to return, a rescue effort was launched, and engineers, geologists, and cavers from all over the state descended on Sand Cave in an effort to free Floyd. They first tried to pull him out with a harness, but when that failed, it was decided the best method of rescue would be to dig him out. In the meantime, they did everything they could to get him food, water, and light. You could still, like, I mean, you had to be real small, but you could get through to him at this time.
Sent a child down.
Yeah. So meanwhile, the story of Floyd became complete media circus, a national story. Reporters descend on Sand Cave. And one of them, whose name is William Burke Miller, whose diminutive size had earned him the nickname Skeets, as in mosquito, he dared to descend into Sand Cave himself to interview Floyd. And his work ended up earning him... it ended up earning him a Pulitzer Prize. I'm laughing because I put a Nobel Prize in my notes, and I don't think... they give out Nobel Prizes.
I don't think he won a Nobel Prize for that.
I think it was a Pulitzer Prize. Sand Cave became a tourist destination. Maybe not in the way Floyd had wanted. Due to all the attention, sightseers flooded into the area, and opportunistic vendors set up shop at the mouth of Sand Cave to sell food, drink, and souvenirs. and as you can expect, this only made things worse. To stay warm, visitors lit campfires at the mouth of the cave, which in turn melted the natural ice inside of it. 5 days into the rescue efforts, the melting ice caused a landslide that cut Floyd off from his rescuers, and with the cave system now impassable, they had to switch tactics. So for 2 weeks, they dug straight down into the earth, and they had to do it by hand with, like, pickaxes and shovels, because they worried that...
I'm sorry, I heard June. Yeah, just I know. Scream.
She's being real obnoxious. Basically, like, they didn't want to use, like, mechanical equipment because they were worried that, like, any fumes, like gas fumes, would be drawn straight into the cave and Floyd would just suffocate. So pickaxes was. They dug 55 feet down into the ground, where they did finally manage to reach Floyd. But unfortunately, it was too late. He was dead from exposure. It was estimated he had passed just 3 days prior, which is very sad.
If you want to, like, get super, super in depth on this story, there is an episode of The Dollop about it that It ruined me. Oh, yeah. It's terrifying. I hate it.
I did not go into a lot of detail about this because I don't like to think about it. Sand Cave was initially sealed with Floyd's body inside, although he would eventually be removed from the cave just a few months later to be buried closer to his family's home. And today he rests in Mammoth Cave Baptist Church Cemetery inside the park.
There's a cemetery in the park?
I'm guessing it probably predated when the park was a park. This would have been 1925-ish. Yeah, probably. And it wasn't a park until 1941. Okay. So there's probably at some point in there. They're not going to move a cemetery. Well, not that people haven't moved cemeteries, but I don't think that was their top priority.
Yeah, not from an area like that.
So there are stories of Mammoth Park rangers encountering Collins' ghost, still haunting caves and death just as he did in life. He is frequently spotted in a chamber known as Big Chief and apparently likes to be a dick by switching off people's flashlights and headlamps, leaving them... You know, if you're in a cave and you're deep enough and someone switches off your light, it's utter darkness. There's no light there.
Do you think maybe he's, like, feeling a little vengeful towards tourists just on account of, you know, what tourists did to him?
Yeah. I could see it. So the next park we are going to visit on our spooky tour of spooky parks is the Indiana Dunes National Park in Indiana. You probably would have guessed.
The Indiana Dunes?
Indiana Dunes.
I didn't know they had dunes inland.
Well, it's on the shores of Lake Michigan, if that explains anything.
A little?
I guess that's dune territory. There are no giant worms, though.
Thank you for making the dune joke before I could.
So, Indiana Dunes is one of our newest national parks, having been redesignated from a national lakeshore to a national park on February 15th, 2019.
Oh, that is recent.
Very recent. Yeah, they're still making new national parks. Who would have thought? So, the park spans 15,000 acres and 15 miles of Lake Michigan shoreline, and it boasts beaches, marshes, prairies, forests, and, of course, dunes, which can rise in height to nearly 200 feet and just happen to be haunted by a mysterious naked woman known as Diana of the Dunes.
Lady of the Dunes was on the East Coast. Never mind.
Yeah, different dunes. Sorry.
Dunes are fucking creepy, man.
Yeah, that's... It feels... I don't know. It feels very desolate to me. Like, it's not the kind of landscape people, like... Well, as we're going to learn, some people do. But not a lot of people, like, live there. You know?
About 2.5 hours away from Portland is the Oregon Coast Dunes. Apparently the biggest dunes in the United States.
Ooh.
Yeah.
It does look... It does, like, the pictures I've seen of, like, this park and, like, dunes in general... on like shorelines, very impressive, very beautiful.
I think, yeah, like dunes and deserts and stuff freak me out almost more than the ocean.
Oh, is this your
version? Big open expanses of
This is just your ocean.
Yeah, I don't like big open expanses of things, so like the ocean, the Midwest freaked me out a little bit.
I was just going to say, I think space. I just saw a Depths of Wikipedia post about prairie madness, which is essentially like people from the coast will come to the Midwest and just be driven insane by how flat it is, which
it's I get. It's scary.
It's you shouldn't be able to see that far. I agree.
No, I need like something in my way. I need to know that there's like changes and like so dunes.
Diana of the Dunes is not a legend. She, at least not in the Bigfoot sense, she was a real person. Her name was Alice Mabel Gray, and Alice enrolled in the University of Chicago in 1897 at the age of 16, where she studied biology, math, and astronomy. She worked for a little while at the U.S. Naval Observatory as a computer. Which is literally the job title for a person who does mathematical equations. This is new to me, too.
I just pictured an old-timey lady sitting in a chair and, like, someone pulls up a chair in front of her and just starts poking her.
She's beep, got a little tray boop, out beep, in front beep, of her. Boop. Yeah.
Barry, can you hurry up and ask me the question? I have stuff to do.
I'm presuming, like, this is where the word computer comes from, in that, like, when they... invented computers, they were like, oh, this is doing what the people did.
Yes. It makes sense. It's just very strange hearing it in its original context.
Agreed. But so she did this job as she was a computer for a while. But then she decided she was going to go continue her studies and earn a master's degree from the University of Göttingen in Germany. She's very learned.
Nice.
Especially for a woman of like this age, which is, yeah, very cool. But all that got her was a job as a stenographer back at the University of Chicago. And faced with the unending horror that is a 9-to-5 job, Alice opted to move to the dunes at the age of 34, bringing with her just a blanket, cup, knife, and a gun.
Hell yeah, Alice.
Yeah, this lady's
I know this cool. doesn't end well for you, but hell yeah.
So she lived in a shack on the shore of Lake Michigan studying the ecology of the dunes, and she made her own furniture out of driftwood, ate fish and berries, and spent a great deal of time reading, which, in theory, sounds really cool.
Dope as hell.
I would not do well out in the elements on my own. Like, I very much enjoy modern comforts, but, like, I love the idea of this.
Well, I mean, to be fair, it was, like, the 1800s, so there weren't a lot of modern comforts.
Fair. It was probably just, like, mostly normal.
A bathroom.
Yeah. So while Alice spent many years living a solitary life, she wasn't entirely isolated. She did frequent the library in Miller, Indiana, and even made trips back to Chicago to visit its museums. Once every so often, she was spotted swimming naked in the lake. Truly a scandal. Alice's story made its way to the newspapers, who nicknamed her Diana of the Dunes in reference to the Roman goddess of wildlife.
Ah, my favorite goddess. Just vibe-wise.
Of course, yeah. Alice told the papers, "I want to live my own life, a free life." I love this woman. She did become somewhat of a local celebrity because, you know, she's a woman doing things. And she used that free publicity to speak publicly about the need to protect and conserve the Indiana dunes, which at the time were being threatened by encroaching real estate development, as, you know, is the story of this entire country.
Yeah, we're still kind of doing that.
In the early 1920s, Alice met and began a relationship with a local fisherman and carpenter named Paul Wilson. They had two children together, though their time together was short and marred by suspicions of murder, which is a whole other story that I'm not going to get into. He might have killed someone. Maybe a dead guy just showed up near their shack. Who knows?
Yeah, that's probably what happened.
In 1925, Alice died of kidney failure at her home in the dunes at the age of 43. She is credited with focusing public interest on the conservation of the dunes and is part of the reason why they're still protected today, which I find really cool. Her ghost, of course, has been spotted in the park, running naked along the beaches and diving into the waves of Lake Michigan. Besides this occasional sighting, she apparently just kind of keeps to herself as she did in life, which is her prerogative.
I just like how this woman who did so much and was so smart, she's a naked ghost now.
Well, there's nothing more titillating than a naked woman, I guess. Of course, that's a part about her. Everyone remembers.
Yep.
That's not entirely true. She is honored today by the park through Diana's Dare, which is like a challenge to visitors to follow in her footsteps. It's like, go
to swim naked.
There's no naked swimming. They're like, go to this trail and do this hike and then take a picture of a selfie with a dune or like things like that. Just kind of like, but it's pretty cute. It's nice that she's still kind of a part of the park's personality.
Yeah.
Yeah. And history and legacy. I like that. So yeah, pretty cool woman who I didn't know existed before I heard this ghost story. So like sometimes ghost stories can be educational.
Love a cool lady.
All right, moving further west, Rocky Mountain National Park.
Hell yeah, tell me where I can see some ghosts.
I don't know if you're going to like this one. Rocky Mountain National Park, located near Estes Park, Colorado, and just an hour drive from Denver, is another one of our country's most popular parks. Established in 1915, the park's main feature is obviously the Rocky Mountains themselves.
The Rocky Mountains.
Kind of the point. The Continental Divide runs right through the middle of the park, which is pretty cool.
No shit.
Yeah. You can go all the way up there, maybe. Actually, I would be very impressed if you got up all that way this time of year, but you never know.
Yeah, it'll probably be closed, but that's cool.
Yeah. I would be remiss, of course, if I didn't mention the Stanley Hotel, aka the hotel that freaked Stephen King out so badly he wrote The Shining. But that's technically not located in the park. That's in the town of Estes. And also, Emily already did a whole episode of that already, so go back and listen to that.
I did. I have some. Well, no, I'm not gonna take the Shining tour, because we only have time for one tour, and they have a dead guy in the basement, so, you know,
priorities. Yeah. So within the park, there are more spooky legends, including tales of monsters lurking in a blue mist, but not Stephen King's
Great.
Mist. Different
mist. Oh, I think that was John Carpenter.
But wasn't that from a Stephen King movie, a Stephen King book?
The Mist?
Yeah, The Mist. The 2007 movie, The Mist. Yes. Director Frank Darabont, story by Stephen King. Are you thinking of The Fog?
My bad. Yep. Oh, it was a short story, that's why.
Yeah. Yeah, I don't think it was a movie.
So here's a fun Stephen King fact for you. He allows film students and stuff to adapt his short stories for $1.
Like, that's very cool.
That's all you have to do to get the rights. Yeah, I actually worked on a Stephen King adaptation when I was in film school because of that.
What was the story?
It was based on, I think the short story was called Survivor Type, but I haven't read the actual story, but in the film that we made, this like cocaine dealer gets shipwrecked and has to eat himself.
This does sound vaguely familiar from like previous times we've talked about it. That's gruesome.
It was fun because I did the set deck and stuff. So we spent a weekend staying at a Christian camp on the coast that was off season, and like hiking out. Oh God, it felt like 5 miles, but it was probably like a mile, but hauling film equipment the beach.
That adds 4 miles for sure.
Yeah. It was fun. I have never seen the finished film. But I made a lot of bricks of fake heroin for it.
Good times. What memories?
Film school.
So in the late 1880s, a prospector known as Miner Bill to the locals of Estes Park claimed that on multiple occasions, a blue fog would descend on the valley near his cabin on land that would eventually become the national park. According to Bill, once the mist disappeared, he started finding the remains of animals picked clean to the bone and surrounded by three-toed footprints, much too large to belong to any local predators. Or at least, you know,
aliens.
Any known predators. Bill was eventually declared insane and even committed to an asylum for 5 years, only to return to the mountains once he was released, still, you know, making these wild claims about strange monsters in the valley. After some time passed and the citizens of Estes realized it had been a little while since they'd heard from Bill, a small group set out to his cabin to do a wellness check. There they found Bill's bones near his front step and an eerie three-toed footprint circling his cabin.
The aliens ate Bill?
The aliens ate Bill.
Rude.
Today, it's said hikers visiting the higher elevations of the park have reported seeing the same blue mist. It's said.
Well, good thing I won't be able to get to the higher elevations of the park.
Another legend of the Rocky Mountain National Park dates back to the time of the Uta people, some of the land's earliest indigenous inhabitants. And as that story goes, a group of Uta people were camped near Grand Lake when they were ambushed by a rival tribe. And while attempting to escape across the lake, a canoe carrying Uta women and children capsized and everybody on board drowned. They are said to still
haunt. Is it Ute or Ute?
Ute. I think that's what Google told me.
Okay. I've heard it pronounced Ute, but I'm also uncultured.
I am equally as uncultured. So if I'm pronouncing it wrong, please somebody correct me. So they are said to still haunt the waters of Grand Lake today, calling on any camper or hiker that might cross their path to join them in the lake.
No, thanks. I'm good.
So and maybe just avoid that part of the park.
Lakes?
Grand Lake specifically.
Yeah, if I see a blue mist, I'll turn around.
good plan. So Yellowstone National Park is our next one. You know, the big famous one. It was established in 1872 as our country's first national park and is widely accepted to be the first national park, like, in the entire world. Obviously, because, you know, we're America.
Teddy Roosevelt declared it a national park, right? That was him?
Maybe. I know he's definitely, like, connected to the park. I don't know if he was the one. Let me go Google this and find this out right now. Can I just get the Wikipedia page, please?
So glad I can drag you into my game of Emily half remembers shit.
It says a bunch of other people in Theodore Roosevelt, pre being president, were successful in carrying through the Park Protection Act, which saved the park.
Okay, so yes, Teddy.
Yeah, he was involved.
That's all. Please continue your story.
It's primarily located on the northwest corner of Wyoming, though parts of the park do extend into Montana and Idaho. It's famous not only for its beautiful landscape and impressive wildlife, but, you know, obviously its geysers and other geothermal features, like Old Faithful, and also the supervolcano that could erupt at any time and kill us all.
There's actually a great plot point involving the Yellowstone geyser in this current season of Resident Alien.
Interesting.
Yeah. This is going to sound insane.
Yes, but, that's why I want to hear it.
Resident Alien has the most accurate depiction of, like, alien lore that I've ever seen.
Continue.
No, that's it.
No, I want. How does it involve Old Faithful?
Oh, the Greys are building a bomb to blow up Old Faithful using the water underneath the geyser, and it will destroy humanity.
Oh, okay. That all tracks.
And Alan Tudyk is trying to stop them.
Good on him.
It's a great show.
So ignoring the supervolcano and the aliens for a minute, let's go back to the wildlife. Yellowstone boasts grizzly bears, cougars, wolves, and elk, along with the oldest and largest public bison herd in the United States. So while there are plenty of things in Yellowstone that can kill you, our ghost story for this park actually comes from maybe an unlikely source, maybe not. The Old Faithful Inn, which is a National Historic Landmark and the largest log-style structure in the world. It's like a big old log cabin. That's not a cabin. It's like a big hotel. The hotel, as many do, has a whole host of ghosts, including a crying child who disappears when guests approach to help him, and also a sea merchant who likes to peek in people's windows, which... One, why? Two, what is a sea merchant doing in Wyoming?
That was actually my biggest question. It's landlocked.
Yeah, I don't know. I do not have any further details on these stories, and we're not going to talk about them anyway.
We have your traditional creepy child ghost. Is there a woman in white ghost?
You know, Emily, there is a woman in white ghost. The most famous ghost of the Old Faithful is that of the Headless Bride of Room 127.
Every hotel has a crying child and a woman in white.
Correct. The bride's story begins, as these stories so often do, with a headstrong young woman arguing with her father about his intentions to marry her off to a respectable man of some sort of social standing. Her heart, of course, already belonged to another man, one who, you know, just happened to work as a servant in her family's household.
Tale as old as time.
Yeah. She was in love. Her father was convinced this was just a plot, you know, to get his hands on the family fortune. A real, but daddy, I love him. Kind of situation.
A real Little Mermaid.
Yeah. Eventually, he caved on the condition that the couple would not receive any financial assistance beyond the, you know, already substantial dowry that, you know, was only proper. So
glad this man is putting his family fortune over his daughter's well-being.
Yeah.
Great work, Dad. Love to see it.
Father of the year.
God, old-timey dads are the worst.
After the wedding, the newlyweds traveled from New York to Yellowstone for their honeymoon, but their happiness was short-lived because the husband, it turned out, had a gambling habit, and by the time they reached the park, he had already frittered all of their money away. So, that for her.
Just Christ.
They were seen arguing frequently at the Old Faithful Inn where they were staying until one night the husband simply disappeared from the premises, fleeing in the middle of the night. His bride was nowhere to be found until staff discovered her in the bathtub without her head.
Great.
That was found in the crow's nest, which is like a treehouse kind of structure overlooking the inn's lobby. That's where the band would sit and play every night. And guests at the inn have spotted her there late at night, still, of course, in her white wedding dress, descending the stairs with her severed head tucked under her arm.
I honestly, like, that's too bad for her, but love the visual. Like, A plus.
Classic ghost. I will say that in 1983, an assistant manager at the inn admitted to making the whole story up. And there doesn't seem to be any actual record of a murder there. But, you know, folklore is folklore. The story is still being told today. So that makes it true enough, right?
It could be a tulpa at this point.
Yeah, definitely a possibility.
I mean, literally the plot of an episode of Supernatural, but yeah, enough people believe in it and give it energy that, like, it could be. Who knows?
Our next haunted park is the Grand Canyon.
Hell yeah.
And the Grand Canyon National Park became our country's 15th national park in 1919 after decades of unsuccessful attempts to designate it as such. You would think that this one would be a no-brainer, but apparently not.
It would be really easy.
Oh, why? there was like, I won't go into like all the details because I didn't write them down. But like there was like a bunch of different bills and like campaigning. It was just like the bill would come up in Congress and Congress would be like, nah, not going to be a national park.
It's like, so Congress has always been useless.
Correct. Some 900 people have died in the area that is now the park since the 19th century. 128 of those were killed in 1956 when two commercial airliners collided 21,000 feet over the Grand Canyon and plummeted into the canyon floor below. While you can't hike to the crash sites themselves, there is a particularly challenging 30-mile trail that passes nearby. Hikers have reported seeing lights in the area, including one spooky instance, I love this, where a hiker claimed to have seen a line of over 100 lights in a slow procession down the trail.
Oh, hate it.
Yeah.
I hate that.
Love the image. I would pee my pants, but
it's kind of like the night marchers in Hawaii, like conceptually.
Yeah.
A plus.
Yeah.
In practice, absolutely the fuck not.
Impeccable vibe, but no thank you. In another incident, a park ranger reported seeing at least a dozen people dressed in quote unquote city clothes while deep in the backcountry. But before he could investigate further, they all disappeared.
It really depends on which city, because Las Vegas is pretty close by. So I did just picture a lot of guys in like suits and ladies with the big feathers.
Or like men in bolero hats. Yeah.
Oh, yeah. Elvis impersonators.
Yeah. More active than the plane ghosts is the spirit of a young woman said to haunt the Transept Trail, which winds from the Grand Canyon Lodge to the north rim of the canyon. It's said that shortly after the lodge was built in 1928, a young family, so a woman, her husband, and their son, came there to stay. And eager to take in the sights of the canyon, the husband and son set off of the Transept Trail while the woman stayed behind at the lodge. When night set in and her husband and son still hadn't returned, the woman set off to find them, searching the trail, dressed in a white dress with blue flowers. Seems impractical, but, you know, ghosts are all about the drama. So,
what if all these women in white died wearing, like, normal clothes, but since they're a ghost, it's white?
That, you know, that would make more sense to me that, like, maybe they just died in regular clothes, but, like, you know, ghost fashion sense dictates that you gotta dress in something spooky. I don't know.
I mean, there's a nude ghost that we talked about, so...
Wouldn't you want to be a nude ghost? Just be free.
No! No! I don't want my bits out for eternity. I want my ghost to be wearing, like, sweats or, like, you know, something comfortable, like leggings.
I would do leggings. So, unfortunately, the woman's search would be in vain, as she would soon learn that her husband and son had been caught in a storm and slipped off the trail into the canyon, falling to their deaths. Distraught, the woman returned to the lodge, where she would later take her own life. It's said that if you hike the Transept Trail... Just, yes?
I guess maybe we should, as women, maybe we should just stop wearing white dresses as well. Like, just kind of rule that factor out, and then see what happens.
Yeah, maybe, like, nothing good ever happens after 2 a.m. Nothing good ever happens when you're wearing a white dress.
Correct. Well, weddings, but...
I think that was the joke I was trying to make, maybe.
Nothing ever good happens when you're wearing a white dress, parentheses, except weddings, parentheses, if you guys like each other, parentheses, maybe wear off-white.
A nice ivory.
Ooh, an eggshell. Yeah. I actually prefer an off-white. A stark white, I find it unsettling.
Yeah, I feel like this is not a color that suits a lot of people. It's just too, like, the contrast is too much.
So you gotta do, like, a cream.
Yeah, you gotta go with something that kind of, like, you know, suits your undertones and whatever. I don't know how any of that works, but I'm gonna say it anyway.
We're podcasters. We have the right.
We do. It's said if you hike the Transept Trail today, you might hear the sounds of a woman crying or even see the ghost herself wandering the trail in, of course, her white dress. When the Grand Canyon Lodge burned to the ground in 1932, witnesses swore they can make out the face of a woman in the flames. Very spooky.
And it was just some lady that they hadn't rescued. Oh, it's a ghost, or if it wasn't, it is now.
That's terrible. I love it.
Do her husband and son not haunt the trail? They also died violent deaths.
I guess not.
In there, like, okay.
Maybe they haunt the ground below it? Who knows?
Interesting.
I don't know. No stories that I could find of the other two. Maybe they're just not interesting enough. Be ghosts.
So here's a fun thought exercise. On the documentary TV show Ghosts.
Yes.
if a ghost falls in a hole, they can't get out because they can stand on floors, but they walk through walls. So walls not solid, they go straight through them. Floors solid, they can sit on stuff. So when they fall into a hole, the ground becomes a wall and they can walk through it into the dirt.
That makes logical sense, correct?
Yes. Do you think this husband and son may have fallen through the wall of the Grand Canyon?
I mean...
and are just kind of wandering?
Possibly. Yeah, you think maybe after 100 years or so, they would have found one of the trails out of the Grand Canyon, but... because, like, you can walk
it's
down...
It's dark down there, man.
Yeah, I don't know. It's also really big.
Maybe they're in a cavern or something.
Yeah.
It's pretty grand, I would say.
Yeah.
Anyway. Just derailed that whole thing.
That's okay. We were done with that one anyway. We're going to move on to Death Valley National Park, which is on the border between California and Nevada, and is not only the largest national park in the contiguous United States, but also the hottest, driest, and the lowest. Lots of...
I think Coachella takes place near there.
Probably. I'm not cool enough to know where Coachella is, to be honest. I know it's in California.
It's in Palm Springs,
yeah,
I think.
That sounds about right.
Yeah, it's Palm Springs.
So while you might not expect a desert to be particularly biologically diverse, the park is home to many unique species, including the Joshua tree, bighorn sheep, coyotes, and the Death Valley pupfish. Can you believe there are fish in Death Valley?
Oh, no, the name really implies that there isn't a lot out there.
The pupfish is a small silver-colored fish left over from a time before Lake Manly dried up sometime around the end of the last ice age. The lake does occasionally still reform today. Like, if you get enough rainfall, like, a lake will just show up, which is pretty cool.
Probably this year, because I think I heard that it rained more in California than in Washington this year.
Really? Woof.
Like, LA got more rain than Seattle.
That's actually insane.
Yeah, it's not great.
So Death Valley pupfish can survive water that is four times saltier than the ocean, hotter than 116 degrees Fahrenheit, or as cold as 32 degrees Fahrenheit. They live in two very specific locations within the park, Salt Creek and Cottonball Marsh, and the colonies have been separated for so long that they've evolved into their own separate subspecies.
Insane.
This has nothing to do with ghosts. I just think they're neat.
It's just a little fun fact that we slipped
just
in there.
Just a little fun fact. So anyway, you would definitely expect a place called Death Valley to have ghosts. And of course it does. The ghost town of Skidoo has one named Hooch Simpson, a man who was hanged twice. Once for murder, and then a second time, so the local newspapers could snap a good photograph.
Hooch is a great name for a gentleman, truly. Honestly.
The fun fact is, like, this did not take place in one day. Like, they hanged him, then they buried him, and then a little while later, they dug him up again, and then hanged him again.
It's like the dude equivalent of when you throw away the box for the macaroni and you need to pull it out again so you can see how much butter you're supposed to put in it.
I got shit. How long do I boil this for?
Yeah. God damn it. Get him out.
So while they were at it doing all this, you know, second hanging this stuff, the town doctor went ahead and cut off Hooch's head just to check out his brain to see if he may have been suffering from syphilis and if that was the reason he'd, you know, been driven to murder.
I think there were other ways to find out if he was suffering from syphilis, doctor.
Today, Hooch is known to wander what's left of Skidoo looking for his missing head, as headless ghosts are wont to do.
Fair enough.
Death Valley has more than just ghosts, though. It also has a bunch of big rocks, some weighing as much as 700 pounds that like to move on their own.
Like in SpongeBob.
Yes.
God, I forgot. No, I'm not going to explain the joke because it's too in-depth, but okay, that's creepy.
Rocks. Okay, I'm just going to take your word for it. The appropriately named Racetrack Playa is known for stones that mysteriously slide across the dry lake bed seemingly of their own accord, leaving tracks in the dust behind them that can stretch for hundreds of feet. So there is an explanation for this one, and it's actually pretty cool. It's basically just this rare combination of, like, rain, temperature, and wind. So if the rain falls, it's, like, just enough rain falls, like, a half an inch, and the temperature falls just enough for it to freeze overnight, then when the sun comes back the next day, the ice, like, melts just enough, and it breaks into these large ice sheets.
Okay.
And if there's, like, even, like, just a light breeze, like, the wind will push the ice sheets across the lake bed, and the ice pushes against the rock, and that, like, sends them moving. like sometimes as far as like 200
feet. That's fun.
Yeah, it's crazy. It still like happens incredibly slowly. It's happening like maybe a few inches each second. But it's possible that like tourists have actually seen this happening without actually perceiving it, just because like our brains don't catch it.
Yeah.
Yeah.
If you're not looking for it specifically, it might be hard to catch.
Yeah. So that was another thing that had nothing to do with ghosts. I just thought it was kind of cool.
No, the rocks are haunted.
Oh, yeah. All right. Our final park is Mount Rainier, established in 1899 as our fourth national park. It preserves over 350 square miles of land, including its namesake, Mount Rainier, a 14,000-foot stratovolcano and the highest point in the Cascade Range. I did my best to look for ghost stories since, as previously mentioned, this is the park I'll be visiting next week. No dice. No ghosts that I could find. But you know what Rainier does have?
Yeah. A volcano?
Aliens.
Yeah. I didn't know if you were going to bring this up or not.
So some backstory. I swear to God, I didn't do this on purpose. It does involve another plane crash, which seems to be my thing lately. In December 1946, a transport plane carrying 32 U.S. Marines crashed somewhere on Mount Rainier. And of course, it's the middle of winter. Searching is basically impossible, so it's months before the crash site would eventually be located on the South Tahoma Glacier. So, like, I'm not going to go into the details because it's just kind of tangentially related. But because it is slightly spooky and ultimately pretty tragic, when they did finally find the plane, its location was so remote that it would have been, like, especially in the 40s, impossible to bring the bodies of the Marines down safely. So, you know, they're all just still up there on that glacier.
Yeah, it's kind of like that soccer team.
Yeah,
just that vibe, like no one reasonably would have found them, but
yeah absolutely no way. So anyways, aliens. So it's June 1947 and private pilot Kenneth Arnold is flying past Mount Rainier on his way to an air show in Pendleton, Oregon. At the time, the crash site of the Marine transport was still a mystery, and so there was this $5,000 reward for anyone who might be able to find it. So Ken thinks, hey, might as well go take a look. He has a background in search and rescue and an eagle eye view of the mountain. So he goes, takes a spin. Just before 3 p.m., as he's circling his plane just west of Rainier, he sees a bright flash of light to the northwest. At first, he thinks it's like a reflection of another plane's wing, but then it keeps happening. And then Ken caught sight of something strange. 9 shiny circular objects flying in formation.
I would just like to point out that that this story predates Roswell.
Yes.
We saw him first.
Ken described the objects as being about 100 feet across and completely circular with no tail or wings. He watched as they flipped, banked, and sped across the sky at an estimated speed of 1,200 miles per hour, which is nearly twice the speed record that would be set by Chuck Yeager later that October. So much faster than anything had ever gone on this planet before.
Seems unlikely, but sure.
I mean, Ken. The article I read went into like some detail, like he basically timed it and kind of like estimated the distance they were flying and the distance far away. So this is like him doing math in his head. So how much I believe that number is low, but yeah.
Yeah.
They were going real fast, supposedly. So the description Ken would later give to newspapers used a lot of words that might ring familiar, like disc and saucer. Flying saucers, if you will.
Again, we did it first.
As the story telephone gamed its way through the press, the Chicago Sun ran the headline, Supersonic Flying Saucers Sighted by Idaho Pilot, coining the term flying saucers as we know it today.
You're welcome.
Ken, for what it's worth, seemed to be a little embarrassed by the media attention. He vehemently denied that he'd ever used the term flying saucer himself and maintained that the whole thing had been, you know, sort of blown out of proportion.
Which is probably true.
I know. This is coming from the National Air and Space Museum. So, of course, that's what the government wants us to think.
Oh, well. We'll get our episode on Project Blue Book someday when I feel like it.
So, you know, if I go missing next week in Mount Rainier National Park,
aliens.
It's definitely aliens and not, you know, well.
Bigfoot?
Bigfoot.
Honestly, if you're going to see Bigfoot, that's probably where you're going to see him.
I'm going on a bus tour, and I don't think we're going to make it too far past, like, parking lots. So I'm not afraid of running into Bigfoot or aliens. I'll just say that.
You're doing a bus tour of a national park.
Yeah, that's the only way we can get there. I'm not going to rent a car, and I've got, like, one day.
And plus, you're not exactly a hiker.
Yeah, no, I just kind of want to get the overview of it.
See it.
Yeah. And also, like, it's way too cold to be doing any actual hiking. Like, I would be snowshoeing, which I'm not interested in.
No one has ever been interested in snowshoeing.
I actually did do some snowshoeing on a field trip when I was in elementary school. And actually, I remember enjoying it a lot, but probably because I was, like, contrasting it with the day we had to do cross-country skiing, which I was terrible at.
Yeah, I've never been skiing before. I really have no desire to.
I'm not nearly coordinated enough for skiing. Not even the flat kind. So those are our spooky, haunted, and alien-infested national parks.
I buy it more than missing 4-1-3-1, whatever, that stupid one.
I would buy ghosts before whatever the hell David Politis is shilling for.
But we can't let the internet know that.
God forbid.
Yeah, God forbid you don't believe that Bigfoot's kidnapping people and the government's covering it up. No, that was interesting. I liked, I mean, I could have done without the caving story again.
Nope, I had to ruin everybody's lives. It's just what I do. It's part of this podcast.
I haven't been to the Grand Canyon in a while, but it's probably very haunted.
I believe it. I have not been. I would really like to, but that would involve
going to
Arizona.
Pretty easy to go. I mean, you can go to Las Vegas and rent a car and then
I don't
come back.
To be completely honest, I'm not all that interested in going to Las Vegas either.
I think I was talking to Travis about going to Las Vegas to go to the Grand Canyon. And like, yeah, I'm not super interested in doing a lot of Vegas stuff anymore. I want to go back to the world of Coca-Cola because that sampler was great.
Priorities, yeah.
And the New York roller coaster was pretty fun, but it's very crowded, it's very loud, and it's very expensive. But I mean, there's like the Mob Museum, and Zach Bagans has this like haunted shit museum, which I'm pretty sure is the title on the sign. Zach Bagans' haunted shit museum.
That sounds like Zach Bagans' whole vibe. Yeah,
I guess he's calmed down quite a bit in his old age.
What is he? 50?
That's a good question.
Go ahead, Google that quick.
Yep.
I have to imagine he's at least a decade older than us.
Is Zach 47?
Okay, he's getting there. Yeah, almost exactly 10 years older. Yeah, than me anyway. You're still.
Yeah, he's a little bit older than
you're
I am.
Still young.
Yeah, homeboy hasn't aged since I stopped watching Ghost Adventures like 10 years ago. Anyway, I'm excited to see a blue mist and whatever the hell was up with that.
Eaten by the predator, I guess. How many toes do predators have? I'm going to Google it.
I don't want to Google what I'd have to Google.
How many toes does predator have? The top result says a mix of three toes plus one dew claw or four full toes, three toes plus two.
They have four toes.
Oh, no. AVP Central, which I imagine is standing for Alien versus Predator Central, you know, the website.
Correct.
Says the predators have five toes on their feet. But however, the fifth toe is on the side of the foot and often difficult to see.
It's a dew claw, yeah. Like a dog.
Yeah. Top result.
So it's not the predator.
Do predators with hooves exist? There is so much lore. No, maybe they don't. Maybe they mean like actual predators and not the creature predator.
Probably.
I forgot that word is also a real word.
There are some. Oh, Pukwudgies have 3 foot or 3-toed feet.
But they're kind of little, aren't they?
Yeah. The folk monster has it, but that's in the south. The Boggy Creek monster. Oh, that's also the folk monster. Yeah. We'll do a mini on that at some point. Who the fuck knows? Maybe it's Bigfoot. I don't know how many toes big feet have.
I think usually at least four. I don't know. I think your guess about aliens is probably most correct.
Yeah, I mean, it's a blue mist and weird footprint and evisceration. So,
yeah,
you know,
I would lead aliens.
Anyway, if you've seen a ghost in a national park, please tell us on Instagram at AfternoonIfyed. You can email us at AfternoonIfyedPod@gmail.com. We are also online at GetAfternoonIfyed.com. Where you can find merch. You can donate to our tip jar if you so choose. Remember to rate, subscribe, review, and all of that fun stuff. And we will see you next week for a completely out of left field mini.
Go ahead and put your guesses in those comments now.
Yeah, you're not gonna get it. Goodbye.
Goodbye. We love you.
For more podcasts like the one you just listened to, go to SoBelowMedia.com.
This is As Above, So Below.